First of all, thank you for inviting me to give a talk at this beautiful conference. Je m'appelle Evelyne Kemna, and that's also about it for me. And I didn't translate my slides, so this is the combination of English and English, so please stick with me, because my French is just not there. So I'm going to talk about the fact if we can bring the lab to the OR and then especially focus on the monitoring the heparin. So I found out then a couple of years ago we changed from a point of care device in our department, and we found out that there's really a heparin monitoring dilemma. So I will elaborate a little bit more on that. Let's see, this one. So where do I come from? I come from PEBA, Netherlands. This is the area where the hospitals are located where I work. And we have also some satellite locations where only actually point of care devices are located to serve the clinicians who do outpatient work there. So like a five-part diff, so leukocyte count or blood gases, but that's about it. We have actually our point of care is sort of divided into general streams. We have point of care devices located at the general practitioner office, so like CRP measurements, urine tests, urine dipstick tests to rule out, for example, an infection, the HbA1c for diabetes control, and glucose, of course, and D-dimer to rule out the DVT, like a thrombosis, and so prevents unnecessary sending patients to the hospital. And then we have point-of-care devices at our hospital, and that concludes at least or includes more or less what we already saw today, all kinds of different devices, like blood gas, but also the viscoelastic testing. This morning we had a talk about the Rotem, so we also have that in the operating room, and we have, for example, also one in the laboratory for postpartum bleeding, for example. And the other ones, I think, speak for themselves. So we all know this because we are all laboratory specialists in this room. So what has the lab to offer? That's the point of care analysis. I think we saw multiple examples today of how point of care can contribute to faster analysis, better patient care at the end of the bottom line. So the most important thing is here that we know the bottom line, the sample processing, when it goes through our lab, it's under our supervision. But with point of care analysis, that's not always the case, and it's difficult to be on top of that because I think we are responsible for it, but we don't always get the chance to be responsible for it, so we have to take it. So for now, I'm going to focus on the heparin monitoring dilemma. So more of the point of care testing in the operating room, and then especially during cardiac surgery or vascular surgery, where they use heparin to anticoagulate the patient, and how this is measured. It's measured with the ACT, the activated clotting time. The clinicians always have a strict balance between bleeding and thrombus formation. Because if you look at the left side, you don't want the patient, of course, that there is a bleeding happening during the surgery. But if you look at the right-hand side, you can see the cardiopulmonary bypass apparatus on which the patient is being put on. It's very thrombogenic. Hence the anticoagulation. So if we walk through the cardiac operation, you can see diagnostics which occur in the during the cardiac operations in general. So it's a general. You can see that pre-CPB, this cardiopulmonary bypass, you do a baseline coagulation profile that often also includes platelet mapping and viscoelastic testing, and then the ABG before CPB. And the ACT, the arterial blood gas and the ACT. And then during CPB, the blood gas monitoring is all the time, of course, and the ACT is monitored every 20 or 30 minutes. At least that's in our hospital. Maybe in hospitals where you work at, it's different. Then they assess the coagulopathy. And then post-CPB, so after weaning, after they get off the CPB, they assess again the ACT after they give protamine to the patient. So it's a ACT is a very central test in the cardiac operation. So what would you do? Well, it's not a a room full of clinics, but I just I'm curious if hopefully you will raise hands, because we have a patient and he is preparing for CPB and the baseline ACT value is 124 seconds, which is really great for a baseline measurement. You have the heparin infusion, 400 units per kilogram, and then your first ACT result is 460 seconds. Local target time to go on CPB is higher than 440. So for our institute, this could be enough. But then this is what clinicians act on. So George says, for example, you should administer extra heparin. You just start the procedure and 400 seconds, that 460 seconds will not be enough to keep it that high. But then we have, of course, also Dr. House, and he says, well, you can go on CPB, check ACT again as you do usual. And then you have, of course, the women who can decide you do both. That's exactly what's really happening if you are in the hospital or in the operating room and you have an ACT and you need to act on it. So now the clinician needs to make a decision. We will come back to this case later on. First, a little bit more about heparin monitoring. So where did it came from and how long do we already do this? Because once upon a time, it was 1918, it was discovered by at the Hopkins University by the professor or his alumni, still controversial, who really did discover it. Then it was perfected for safe clinical use in the 30s, and in the mid-50s, it was first used during CPB on humans. But still, monitoring of this heparin was empirically done until the 60s, where Hattersley first described the activated clotting time, and it was introduced by Bull in cardiac surgery in the 70s. And then ACT was virtually non-existent, and then it became widespreadly used during the next 5 years. But in between, there were also, of course, other mechanisms and tests to monitor monitor heparin. But these tests, which I shown here, are not all very useful in the heparin monitoring. For TEG and TEM, so the viscoelastic testing, you can detect if there's heparin there and if it's the cause of your bleed, but the test is really optimized for the bleeding patient and to, as we saw this morning, to transfuse the right products in need. So it's not very useful for the heparin monitoring. And then you have the APTT. It's useful for heparin monitoring, but only in the low range. So heparin concentrations of 0.3 to 0.7, that can be recognized by the APTT, but then it's saturated and you get a plateau and you can't detect anything anymore. Thrombin time is the same. Anti-10A is not point of care available. It's a useful test and maybe in the future will be available and can eventually maybe even replace ACT, but we are not there at that point yet that it's useful. And then you have the heparin monitoring system, which is in theory very could be very useful. However, it did not get the clinical adaptation in the clinic because it seemed to be more difficult to handle and not very reproducible. So we are still left with ACT 40 years after its discovery. It's the best we have. These are all kinds of different point-of-care devices which measure the ACT. And the ACT is measured in the operating room, so it's sort of far away from us, from me. Well, I speak for myself. It was somewhat underexposed, so I really think it deserves more attention from us as laboratory technicians. So here we see the Hemochron response and Betronix. You have the GEM, the Helena, the Abbott. There are all kinds of different ways to measure the ACT. Most of them use mechanical detection or optical detection of clot formed. So really the clot formation is detected by a ball, which moves through magnets or stirring the two probes, or optical detection by LED sensors of the clot. The ISTED is a little bit different. They use a chemical detection of a thrombin formation. So there is a substrate, and thrombin is putting that into an actively compound, which can be amperometrically measured. So it's a different approach than the other systems. So now we're confused. What do we do? Which one is good and which one is not good? Well, we have laboratory guidelines to help us. What should the ACT be doing for us, and how should we figure out as laboratory specialists which one is the best and which one we should be advising to our clinicians? Of course, we have the ISO norm, the ISO 15189. It's very general. It's for the general, for the central laboratory, and then you have the point of care ISO norm, which isn't that helpful for the ACT testing because it's also very general. We are responsible for selecting the point of care device, and it's under the supervision of us, and we need to have adequate training programs. It should be linked to laboratory, to the information system. It should be traceable, certification, everything, but not very more than that, it doesn't tell us. Then we have, of course, the CLSI. This one goes more into detail about anticoagulation monitoring during heparin anticoagulation. So the first one is, I don't know if it's the right word, but it's a kick in the open door. It's, of course, you should perform according to manufacturer's directions. But very important what they state is that there is no standard ACT, and that's really a core message which I want to give today. So you need to establish your own therapeutic ranges for each system and for each procedure and for each activator, because all of them have different detection system, different activators used. So the system behave very differently. I will get into a little bit more detail later. So select the appropriate system for clinical application and heparin range. Okay, and then be very aware, and that's also an important point, of all the pre-analytical and analytical variables which come with ACT testing. Platelet number and function, different medicines, different detection system, etc. Then we have also some recommendation from the clinical guidelines, which are, of course, also there. We have the ELSO, and it says, well, the ACT is most commonly used test to dictate heparin dosage. However, they state potential shortcomings of the ACT, very vague, but they are there, according to them. And they say, you can complement this with an anti-10A, for example. Okay. Well, thank you. That's not very helpful. A European society says there's no role for ACT during PCI. So it's all quite conflicting. And the British Committee for Standards in Hematology and the National Academy of Clinical Biochemistry, they state that there is a role. They recommend the ACT to monitor heparin during cardiac surgery. And the NACB even goes as far, because you don't have to read all this, but what I wanted to show is that they give ranges. They say 300 seconds, 250 seconds, but they also specify the device. But it's based on very small studies. And if I use another device, what range should I use? Should I then be maybe 50 seconds higher or lower? So it's very difficult to handle the ACT right, because we all know this. We've seen it like a trillion times, sorry. But I wanted to make clear that we know if a test is accurate and precise, that's the best way. But with the ACT, we don't have a bull's eye. We don't have a clear, good target range. 300 seconds, 400 seconds. We just don't know, actually, what is the best, because we have some data, but it's not very based on very high-quality research where the devices were clearly stated, etc., etc. So what we do know and what we can say something about is if it's precise. So the other thing with the ACT is the external quality program. and the quality assurance. You have internal, external quality. The ISO says that we have to do that for point of care, of course. It's essential to confirm its accuracy. However, for the ACT, there's no agreed formal external quality program available, as far as I know. I would like to hear it if somebody else has more information, but as far as we know, there's no external quality assurance. So there's no way to compare our ACT with the hospital in the middle of the Netherlands or whatever to see if we are having the same kind of results. And there's no golden standard, so we are kind of at a loss with this test. So what would you do, part two? Patient A had an ACT of 460 seconds, that was where we left, and we started on CBP, and after 20 minutes the ACT was checked again, so we followed Dr. House. The first result is 420 seconds, and then again, extra heparin is administered, because 440 is your aim, you want to have 440 seconds. The ACT is checked again, and it's 440 seconds, after administering 10,000 units of heparin. So Clooney says, well, administer again and check again. And House says, repeat measurement because the lab is always wrong. I don't know if you recognize that, but we get to hear that sometimes. And then this thing is very important because we don't know, there's no golden standard, but we can say something about the duplicate measurements. Is your ACT always the same if you measure it twice on the same machine or two machines and measure the same sample? So that's what we did. We used we had two different point of care devices. I call them system one and system two. And we asked our clinicians, like, what do you feel as a difference which you cannot accept? And they said, well, more than 50 seconds between the same sample, like 400 and 450, that's a big difference for us. And we analyzed 177 samples, and we saw that the system we were currently using already for, I don't know, until the beginning of time, had in one out of four, it was more than 50 seconds difference between the same sample. And the point of care system two, it has 10%, 9%. And the other one, in the lower area and the higher area, the correlation between the two systems was very bad. And this is a zoom in on the lower area, so during vascular operations, where they use lower amounts of heparin, so not the 400 units, but the 100 units per kilogram, sort of. You can see that there is a bias. That there is a bias between the systems. This is a medical decision point, 325. It's a different one than the 440, but it's a different procedure. And it doesn't correlate at all with the medical decision points, with the second point of care device. So you really need to change your target range if you switch. And you really need to know that there is a big difference between those devices. Well, what I want to show, which you already saw, those eyes, all system correlate to a certain extent. If you look at all the literature, which is all the studies which compared all the ACT devices with each other, you see that they correlate to some extent, but they yield different results and they cannot be used interchangeably. That's the conclusion. So for me, my sort of personal mission is a little bit, know your ACT in your hospital and know how it behaves and what the system is you're using. And I want to conclude that the intraoperative testing is really the domain of point of care. And there's no golden ACT standards, no true ACT, and you should know your ACT system and all the influencing variables. And it requires a multidisciplinary approach, as we already heard a couple of times before. And that's it, some acknowledgement and maybe some questions from you.
Yes, thank you very much for this very complete presentation. There is one question from the audience already. OK. Can you give, sorry, I think, the microphone.
Hello, thank you very much. Just a remark about external quality assessment. There exists a program by UK and ECAS for ACT testing in external program quality.
An external program for the ACT?
Yeah.
Okay, so in the Holland we don't have it, but maybe we can join yours. Yeah.
Yeah, that's very important.
Yeah, it's very important. We don't have one.
Very important external quality assessment.
And I know that in the United Kingdom it was there, but it's already stopped. So that's good to know.
So UK NECWAS doesn't have any? UK NECWAS used to have an ACT program. They don't have anything anymore, you say? Is that what you say?
So we don't, for the ACT, there's no external quality program. So we have, for everything, we have an external quality program. For every test we offer, we do. But we, for the ACT, we don't have an external quality.
Okay. Not in UK NECWAS, at least, you say.
Sorry?
UK NECWAS used to have an ACT external quality assessment program, but I understand that they don't have any such program anymore. Is that what you say?
Yeah, they in the United Kingdom they had in you before, and in the Netherlands they briefly had one, I believe, before my time, and then it disappeared because it wasn't working, the materials and the how do you say the sampling going
samples,
around, and it wasn't useful and. Maybe also due because of all the different devices which are used that they stopped. I don't know.
Okay, so not even Pete Meyer has one from ECAT. Is there any other question? I still also would have a question. I have a patient today with new oral anticoagulants that are very widespread. Now you have, an emergency situation.
Yeah.
How does that interfere with your ACT measurement and your assessment?
What we there are currently some studies done, and what we see is that dabigatran is one of the medicines which does influence the ACT. But if you look at the ranges where you measure your ACT in the emergency setting, you don't get that much elevation. However, it's of course a difficult balance, because if somebody took your a DOAC in the morning and you have a peak level, you can see maybe some influence of the dabigatran, but the other ones is below the target ranges where you should work on when you have CBP. But of course, if somebody is very anticoagulated with with the DOACs, then you should also really consider maybe waiting a couple of hours before operating, if it's possible.
Okay, that's a very important information.